Welcome to the Science Off Camera podcast, where we are talking to scientists around the world about their research and its impact, what made them pursue their scientific fields, and how they use imaging and spectroscopy in their labs. My name is Sebastian Remy, and my guest today is Jörg Debus, group leader at the TU Dortmund University in Germany. Jörg's research covers a broad range of materials such as semiconductors, 2D materials, and quantum materials, and he recently started experiments in the field of nanotribology, the study of friction on the nanometer scale. Common to all his research is that he uses the power of light, optics, and spectroscopy to look at materials. Enjoy this fascinating episode. This podcast is brought to you by Teledyne Princeton Instruments, leading manufacturer of scientific cameras and spectrographs for low light measurements from X-rays to infrared light. Discuss your application and book an online product demonstration at princetoninstruments.com.
So I'm Jörg Debus, and I'm working at the TU Dortmund University in Germany. And actually, I'm group leader there. So if you want to translate it literally, my position, it's academic council, but actually it's a group leader position. I have a small group, so 5 PhD students working together with me, and at the moment 3 master students. And so the field of my research is quite broad. So I focus on the one hand on semiconductor physics, so quantum physics, spin physics. And on the other hand, I open a new field, this nanotribology. So actually, I follow the question, what friction is on the nanoscale? Yeah, it's an interesting question what it is. And yeah, these are the two research branches I study. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun and interesting things we found out. So yeah.
Awesome. A lot of things to talk about, it sounds like. And last 2 weeks, you told me you were busy measuring, doing experiments in the lab. I mean, so how did that go? And is that something you get to do often, right? Often when people get into leadership positions in academia, they complain about not having time to spend in the lab anymore. So how did the last 2 weeks go?
Yeah, you're right. So actually, my main job is at the desk. Yeah, so doing some office job, publications writing and so on, proposals. But from time to time, I have the opportunity and the possibility to go into the lab. And especially, I mean, now in the corona times, in the pandemic times, it's a nice switch, yeah, a nice change from this office job going to the laboratory. And the reason is actually, so as a master's student and for this topic, the PhD student has finished a couple of months ago. So I have the nice opportunity to work with the master students directly in the laboratory. And I can speak a little bit about what we are doing there. So we investigate some very tiny structures, monoflakes, monolayers of molybdenum diselenide. And it is actually some kind of follow-up material from this graphene stuff. Yeah, I mean, graphene is very, very popular and familiar in the research fundamental and also application studies. And these transition metal dichalcones, this is a very long name for these materials. It's some kind of follow-up material. And what we investigate there is some dynamics of excitons. So you excite the sample with laser light. What you create there is some coupled electron hole pair, you can say. Yeah, so it's an exciton. And what is the purpose of this? We like to see a very fast time scales how the exciton evolves in time. And this is done with laser system working in the femtosecond range, so very fast. So it's 10 to the minus 15 seconds. Yeah, the pulse is around 100 femtoseconds, so very fast time scale. And also the detection is in this range. And we follow the idea to study the quantum information, spin physics. Yeah, so this is a big topic. And the final idea is that we have some optical access to some spin transportation, spin interactions, going to this quantum computation regime. This is actually the main goal, and for this purpose we have to see how the exciton is evolved in time, even at these fast time scales. So this is what we have done in the lab the last 2 weeks, building up the setup and making the first measurements.
How do the 2D materials, like the transition metal dichroic collagenides, and people build these van der Waals heterostructures, they call it, right? Stack them on top of each other. And what do you hope kind of for them in terms of applications in quantum computing? Because I know quantum computing is like an exploding area, it seems right now. And there's, on the one hand, I feel people made the most progress so far with superconducting kind of circuits, mm-hmm. right? With ultra cold atoms and optical mm-hmm. traps, like with ions and things like that.
Yes.
So where do kind of solid state systems fall in? Can they keep up in performance, or what's kind of the interest, or won't these other technologies not just like run away for quantum information applications, and how worthwhile is it to look at that from that context?
This is a very interesting question, and I can answer this question in one way, that we are doing fundamental research for sure. So we actually, up to now, we cannot say ab initio what is the application of our fundamental research. But nevertheless, solid state systems like this, maybe we exclude this 2D materials a little bit, but for example, if you look at NV centers, so defects in diamond, for example, they can be used for spin information, quantum information, processing things at room temperature. So this is actually a very important step, that you can do the spin physics, the transfer of spin information at elevated temperatures, at room temperature. This is an important thing. You have to switch the spin also in time very fastly. You can also check it for these centers. And they keep also the spin information for a long time, for seconds, even for minutes. So this has been done already. So we can also check this. So because it makes no sense if you create now your spin in a different direction, spin up or whatever, writing your information with your laser in your system or electrically, and it will lose in a very short time this information, it makes no sense for information processing. And for these solid state systems, I would say this defects in diamond, for example, they have a great success and possibility and perspective for these quantum information processing stuff. If you switch then to these 2D materials, as I've said, so we are doing right now this spin physics, this dynamics in the femtosecond or picosecond regime. And then the information is already lost. And this is the biggest issue for these materials. And due to this, there is some ongoing search for different kind of structures, as you said. So it could be some heterostructure, not only such a monolayer, but a heterostructure with some different kind of layers stacking up, and trying to modify the environment of these layers just to have some protection of your, let's say, carriers, of your excitons, protection against the outer world, let's say. Some confinement and no disturbing interactions with the environment. And this is one goal for this research study and material researches. So, and for sure, one thing is also how to create these 2D materials. Typically it's still done via this exfoliating, this mechanically exfoliating, where also the Nobel Prize to Geim and Novoselov has been devoted to for graphene. And this is done actually a lot of times, and typically for these structures, it's for sure not very deterministic, you can say. You're using a scotch tape and put then some layers on some substrate. And there's also now a big challenge, and also a lot of initiatives to shift it to the molecular beam epitaxy. Some very nicely evolved technique to create such monolayers, or atomic layer depositions, or different kind of methods. They, change this creation technique to a more sophisticated one, let's say. So this is also a big issue for if you think about applications, how to create your structures.
That's really cool. Yeah, there's a whole other nuances and whole other possibilities if you can implement things in solid state systems. And what I hear from you is we don't really understand them quite well yet. And with 2D materials, also that we can build these structures in different ways. There's now a myriad of possibilities, right? That people build new structures and see what happens. So that's really cool. So how do you specifically investigate them? How do you try to understand the excitons, as you describe? What do you do specifically to understand these materials?
So one very important aspect is that we use optical methods, so not electrical stuff, but we use optical spectroscopy. So one thing is doing this time resolved measurements on very fast time scales, or even, I mean, if we got in future some structures which have also long kinetics, let's say, we can also go to the millisecond or second range. So this dynamics is one important aspect. And another aspect is for sure the analysis of the spin structure itself, for these excitons or trions, so negatively charged excitons, to know what is the energy level hierarchy for these structures. And this is the other aspect. So this time resolved and the stationary methods. One aspect. Another aspect is also to see if you can create some cavities, some laser cavities with these materials. It's also possible going into directions to some photon correlation measurements, photon statistics. And it's actually not my business, but it's also done in our department with these 2D materials. And these are they're different ways of getting information out of the system and knowing and creating new stuff with these excitons.
So you do time resolved measurements, and you do a lot of spectroscopy also, right?
So it's not only Raman spectroscopy. What we also do for this, it's a basic characterization of these materials. Mm-hmm. Just for sure, one important thing is photoluminescence. We normally use the photoluminescence also for the time resolved measurements, the emission from the excitons, actually to find the polarization characteristics, shifts in magnetic field. So we also apply high magnetic fields to shift the spin levels in magnetic field. And one thing is also, and maybe this I did not mention before, these structures have to be kept at low temperatures, actually. So we use pumped liquid helium. So the structures are in some cryostat and cooled down to minus 270 degrees Celsius. That we have no thermal influences on the excitons and on their spins. So this is also one parameter we can vary apart from the magnetic field. And so we can play around with these external parameters and check how the exciton and their spins react on these parameters. So there's the set screws we typically say we can use.
Why is it that people are particularly interested in spins? Because they have been shown to be really stable quantum structures in other materials? Is that the reason?
The reason that we switched to the spins is actually that, I mean, nowadays we have the smartphones and so on, and you carry information via a pool of electric charges. So this is the way how the information, the zero and one, if we go to this binary code, is used. And the electrons or the carriers have also another intrinsic property besides the electric charge. It's the angular momentum or the spin. And the spin has the property It's a quantum mechanical variable that you can superpose it. Yeah? So it's not only spin up and spin down. Yeah? So you can say that the electron is rotating clockwise and counterclockwise, but you can also superpose them. Yeah? The superposition creates you some quantum state, you can also say. You can entangle it. And this is actually the main advantage if you use spin for using it as a possibility to transfer information, that you have this, let's say, third state, this superposed state. And this opens up a lot of possibilities. And I mean, you could enhance the calculation speed, let's say, with this additional state, this quantum bit. You can also expect that maybe the energy dissipation will be less. Who knows? This is also very important for future things, apart from this faster calculation possibility. And this is actually the reason we a lot of researchers switch to this spin properties.
So for the 2D materials, is the major challenge finding the right heterostructure, producing the right combination of layers, or is it to make really now the material on a larger scale, right? Because the exfoliation technique is not practical then if you want to use them in any practical scenario, right?
I would say both things are still challenging. It is for sure the way of creating these structures. So if you want to do it on a large scale, or in a large scale, you have to do it epitaxially, for sure, definitely. And the second thing is also, I mean, you have these monolayers, some atomic monolayers, and the environment, the dielectric environment, impacts your physics, really the general physics, optoelectronic physics of the monolayer so strongly that, you have to create different stacking or different kind of material compositions, to lower this environment impact on your structure. I mean, it's actually somehow comparable to the decreasing of the dimensions from the bulk crystals, bulk semiconductors, down to this zero-dimensional structures, these quantum dots, for example. You have also some kind of less environment impact due to this spatial confinement in these structures. And this is one important thing also to study in future, and study also now, how to design these structures.
Sure. Yeah, there is this term quantum materials that I have heard more often in recent years, but I feel looking back like 10, 15 years, I did not really hear that term a lot. Is this kind of a newer term for all these materials, quantum dots, 2D materials, like all structures you use for quantum computing or like quantum information sensing, etc.?
I mean, actually, it's true. I did not hear it also 10 years or 15 years ago. So I mean, 15 years ago, the quantum dots and quantum wells like this, the different kind of low-dimensional nanostructures or semiconductor structures was very popular. And now quantum materials, most probably due to the fact that now these 2D materials are very popular in the science. And due to this, the people switch now to these quantum materials. Maybe it's also better to name it quantum materials, maybe also to do some nice proposal, and the politicians have a very nice feedback then, or nice impression from these structures if you say quantum materials. It could be also a reason, selling it in a much much better wording. That could be, I mean,
it's good to the human mind likes to categorize things, and but I find it interesting. It shows that it's like a really vibrant, developing field, and there's a lot of stuff going on. So
although actually, I mean, if you hear quantum materials, the term, I mean, actually it embraces everything. So it's now 1D or 2D or so 0D. It's quite general, actually. So, but I mean, these terms pop up somehow Like a lot of people say this is emerging, yeah, this term emerging or smoking gun and so on. I mean, this is, yeah, these are some terms which pop up a lot of times and yeah.
That's funny, and
all
materials and molecules are quantum materials on some fundamental level, right?
Yeah.
Everything's kind of powered how the atoms are structured and how the bonding between them works. It's all quantum mechanics. So it kind of doesn't
it's
make
true, yeah,
it,
so.
It doesn't say anything in a way, right?
So I mean, it's also an interesting question. I mean, what is where's the limit between the macroscopic, microscopic world or the quantum world or non-quantum world? I mean, it's interesting topic also. So, I mean, actually the C60 clusters, for example, as far as I know, I mean, they have some dimension of a few micrometer. They could be used in this a double slit experiment and also show interference patterns. Yeah, so, and as far as I know, this is somehow the limit up to now, where the quantum mechanics are present or must be considered for these micrometer molecules. Yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah.
I'm curious to learn more about the nanotribology and friction. Is that like for the semiconductors, 2D materials, quantum materials, you use all these optical methods? Is that the same methods you used for measuring of friction in a way, and how does it work, or is it a completely different field?
Actually, I have also to think when it started. So, I mean, I think the method, which was some kind of the linkage between, let's say, the topic and me, was the Raman scattering. I mean, Raman scattering is actually very popular in in different kind of branches of science and research. And the mechanical engineering department was contacting us, and they wanted to do some Raman scattering measurement, because I think it was just a request from a referee for a paper which they have submitted to some journal. And actually, this was the initial starting point coming into this business of what is actually friction at the nanoscale. And there were a lot of proposals now we have written and research going on the last 5 years already. And tribology, I mean, actually, this is the science and also technology, you can say, of interacting surfaces which are in relative motion to each other. And I mean, the term friction is very old, and tribology or nanotribology is also quite popular now because, I mean, if you understand how the friction evolves and behaves in different kind of scenarios, I mean, you can lower the energy consumption or the need of oil lubrication between the surfaces and so on. So you go also into the direction of economics, how it's ecologically positive or negative if you use different kind of oils as lubricants or different kind of solid state lubricants. This is also very popular now that you do not, I mean, in some scenarios, it's not possible to use oil, but you use some film, some coating, which reduces the friction and also the wear. And so that's the part is running a long time, over years or decades. We like to use the optical spectroscopy now a little bit more in general. So Raman scattering, Brillouin scattering, so acoustic phonons, also very important, apart from the optical phonons, which is important for Raman scattering, and speckle photometry, to investigate the structural components of the surfaces and the physical chemical properties. So this is our aim, actually. To shed some light on it. And it's very important to work then interdisciplinary. So we are now at the experimental physics, let's say, branch, and this is very important and also very interesting to work with the chemistry and the mechanical engineers. And from all the sides, we get some input, some information, and create then, some ideas and explanations how the friction is working.
So how do you, when you look at it on the nanoscale, how do you look at friction.
Yeah, nanotribology means actually that we consider the interatomic interactions. I mean, this is actually what you see in the Raman scattering or Brillouin scattering experiments. You have some vibrational modes. Yeah, so from this point of view, you're really at the nanoscale, but we also combine our techniques with, for example, atomic force microscopy. Yeah, and there you have some also some, let's say, some images. It's not also not real images, but nevertheless, you can detect then atoms at the surfaces and combine it with optical spectroscopy. So you have also some correlation of the topography of the surface with our interatomic interactions. And this is what we actually mean with nanotribology, and looking at this at these scales, or at least these interatomic properties. And it's not, I mean, we're in the let's say ex situ, so in the experiments in the laboratory, we get some part which has been used at some tribometer, it's called. So what do you normally have there is some coating. It's some plate with a diameter of 5-6 centimeters, and then a counterpart is coming from the top, like a ball, for example, and it's sliding over the surface for a specific number of turns. And I don't know, 300,000 turns, for example, it takes a few hours, and there is some specific wear, so it's worn the surfaces, both surfaces, from the coating and from this counter body, this ball. And you make then a mapping over this worn area, and then you can compare this worn area, for example, with this fresh, not worn area. And this is actually the way we are doing the experiments. So we get the stuff from the mechanical engineers, and then we do the ex situ, let's say, experiments in our labs. Yeah. But for sure, we also combine, and this is now not so easy. Yeah, we combine our experimental methods at the tribometer, so we can directly look during these tests, during this wear tests, what is happening with the Raman scattering signals from the this in situ then, or operando, you can also say.
That's and really this interesting,
This is much more interesting for sure, and to see what is happening in time. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned a Brillouin scattering. So we heard about Raman a lot on the podcast already, but Brillouin we did not. So can you explain what that is exactly, and what you learn from it, and how it's related to acoustic phonons you mentioned, what those are, and how that's related?
I mean, Raman scattering is actually devoted to scattering of light and the optical phonons of your system. And there is also another branch of phonons, it's acoustic phonons, they have another energy dispersion and so on. And this scattering, if the acoustic phonons are involved, it's called Brillouin scattering. French physicists some years ago was coined his name. And actually it's the same technique, you can say, but the main difference is that the energy of the acoustic phonons is much more smaller. So for the Raman scattering, you're in the terahertz regime normally, and for the Brillouin scattering, you're in the gigahertz regime. So, or if you say it in inverse centimeters, what is normally used for this Raman scattering or the scattering experiments, I mean, the optical phonons are in, I don't know, it could be at 10 or 50 inverse centimeters for sure, but it's normally at 1000, let's say, inverse centimeter. And the acoustic phonons are at 1-2 inverse centimeters and lower, or let's say 10, like this. So the energy range is much, much more different. And due to that, you cannot actually use, let's say, a triple spectrometer. The resolution is not enough, or the suppression of the laser light is not sufficient enough. So you have to switch to some interferometer, tandem interferometer, interferometric measurements. And there you can go very close to the laser line and get information from this acoustic phonon modes. And I mean, from the acoustic phonons, I mean, it's some kind of, you can also say this Bruin scattering is some kind of optical ultrasonic measurement. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you combine the optics with the acoustic phonons, and you deduce typically some elastic properties from your surface due to these experiments, strain stresses you can analyze, which is not so easy with Raman scattering, for example, where you normally get information about the chemical composition. The Bruin scattering is actually devoted more to the elastic properties of your surface.
So the acoustic phonons are more sensitive to these strain parameters and other parameters that are relevant to investigate friction kind of processes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Also due to their smaller energy, you know, there's a higher sensitivity to these properties. Yeah.
The quantum material research part is kind of the fundamental, you know, like exploration, discovery kind of part of your research, and the tribology, I mean, there's like exploration in that as well, but it's a much more practical thing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I fully agree. Yeah. So this is, you can say it's applied physics. Yeah. So it's much more application based research. For sure, it's some kind of fundamental research, but it's definitely related to the application. And this is also very interesting. Yeah. So this switching from the fundamental research to the application based one. It's interesting, and also the transfer of the methods which were elaborated for the fundamental research now to this application based one is also very challenging at some point. Yeah, so you have to switch from this laboratory, the stationary experiments, to this operando in situ stuff. This is not so easy. It's challenging. It's fascinating, and keeping in mind that also this research is also devoted to some ecological aspects. This is also very important. Yeah. So reducing friction is, I mean, I don't know exactly the numbers. Yeah. I mean, if you could reduce, I don't know, the friction, or the friction is at least in Germany 10% from this BIP. Yeah. So it's a huge number. A lot of billions of money just go away just for friction in the automobile industry and so on. So if you make this corresponding friction and money, so this is also interesting. So not only the ecological part.
So once everything opens up and the corona restrictions are gone, and that might still take a while, but what is the first thing you will be able to do that you can't do right now?
We are quite lucky that as a PhD student, and we can do some research, at least with some limiting aspects that only one or two persons are in one laboratory. And I mean, if the pandemic situation will get better, I don't know what is. I mean, actually, we have not so many limitations. Yeah, to be sure, to be honest, for sure, we are doing now a lot of home office work. This is not so nice. So I would be happy then if we can stay every day again in the university. Yeah, this social contact is and much more important than we maybe told us one year ago. Yeah, and I mean, it's actually 1 year ago already. No, it's exactly 1 year ago. Yeah, so 2 days ago, yesterday it was 17th of March, we go into the home office, and I just remember one situation at the corridor of our department, that we with my boss and secretary, we just say, okay, we see us after Easter time. Yeah, so that was the term and what we have said there. And yeah, it took now more than 1 year. Yeah, maybe we are coming back. No, I don't know actually, Sebastian, what I will do, because it's actually normal at the moment. Yeah, more or less. Yeah, so we can do some research.
That's awesome. Like things that seemed like normal to you 2 years ago, you can like explore completely new, and so develop a new appreciation. Yeah. So that's going to be really interesting. Yeah, thank you so much, Jörg, for being on the podcast. It's really a pleasure to talk to you. Really fascinating. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. And yeah, it was great and it was fun.
Thanks again to Jörg Debus for being on this episode of Science Off Camera. Check out the show notes to learn more about Jörg's research. He recently talked about his amazing experiments with quantum materials on one of our webinars. If you enjoyed this episode, it would be amazing if you would consider subscribing on your favorite podcast platform and follow Princeton Instruments on social media to get updated about new episodes. Check out princetoninstruments.com for the latest in scientific camera and spectroscopy technology for physical and life sciences. See you next time and have a great day.